Hello and welcome to the Modern Ear Podcast, where we take a look at classic and favorite albums. I'm Trevor.
I'm Barrick. And today we talk about a very important album.
Oh my gosh.
For indie music of the early 2000s.
For Portland.
For Portland. Yeah. We will talk about The Crane Wife by The Decemberists. Trevor, why this album?
I used to listen to this album a lot, and I thought, I don't really know that much about it. It would be interesting to research. I discovered it when I was out on tour back in 2006. And I remember listening to it while traveling through Spain. So I listened to the song O Valencia in Valencia, yeah. which was fun. I got a kick out of that in 2006.
O Valencia. That's a good one.
And actually, it would have been 2007 that I listened to it because it came out in October 2006. Yeah.
I
was in Spain in the summer of 2007. So it would have been 2007. Had you heard the album before, Barrick?
No. And I was kind of, how to say, I was very happy about your choice. So that's, first of all, immediately from the first tone. But I was also a little bit sad that I didn't listen to that album when it came out, because it would be perfect in that time, the music I was listening to, and for 2006. And I'm pretty sure that the friends I lived with, that we would all enjoy it. But at the end, I was more happy to discover this album for me. And I was surprised, you know, I was listening so much to indie music and music like this, that the Decemberists are just only right now coming to my life. But still, it's great to, you know, there's always new bands to figure out, even when they're not new. So that was a really good experience.
After listening to Crane Wife, did you go and listen to any of their other songs?
Yeah, I'm starting to. So, yeah. But not to take too much away already, but this album catched me so much that it occupied so much of my mind and brain that I really stick to that album first. So I have to listen to it all over again and again and again. So I have now a lot more to discover from them, because so far I really stick with Crane Wife, because it is such an intriguing album and a good album to hang with, I would say.
It is. I completely agree.
So good choice.
So, as we mentioned, it was released in 2006 on October 3rd. And the album has 10 tracks and is 60 minutes and 15 seconds. So, basically, hour-long album.
Yeah, officially has 10 tracks, but it seems it has more because of some tracks that are basically many tracks in one.
Well, track two is three songs on one track.
Yeah.
And track nine is then Crane Wife 1 and 2, which is also then basically two songs.
Yeah.
So they have 10 tracks, but essentially 13 songs, which is that also interesting. It's produced by Tucker Martin and Chris Walla.
Chris Walla.
I don't know who either of those guys are.
Now I know. So, and it also, I had a little aha moment about this Chris Walla guy.
We can go into that in the deep dive.
Yes.
Because I really, I just opened it to see on Wikipedia who Chris Walla is. That is a big aha moment then.
It is. Did you have some big aha moments while you had your not very first listening, but now your first listening after you choose that album?
I think when I started listening to it originally, I don't think I had as much of an appreciation for song structure as I do now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, back in 2006, 2007, in 2007, when I would have heard it, I would have been, 25? And I just think I wasn't, I loved music, but just not as experienced in music listening as I am now, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Do you think that also has to do with your profession, or just you're so intrigued into music anyway that you're, how you listen to it would be still more into the songwriting and the structure of it?
I think a bit of it is of course work, but I think a lot has actually developed in the past year since we've been doing this podcast. I have noticed that just my listening habits when I sit down and actually critically listen to an album has changed. I mean, when I work with a band, I sit down and listen to their music ahead of time if I have time to, and then try to do the critical listening then. But it's still different than what it is now. After how many episodes that we have now, 12 or 13 episodes. Have you noticed that with yourself, if your listening has changed at all in the past year?
I think it did. Still, I'm listening differently to music. So I try to think more about structure and to find something out about it. But I cannot hear so many things as you. I think I'm still listening differently. For me, it's still that so many things are, it's really about the feelings I get still. It's so much about feeling and how feelings change with the information and the picture I have in my mind. So, and I also think it will change when I will ask myself different questions before listening to it. That's what I will try for next episode. So if I ask myself in advance what I'm looking for, or maybe I'm trying to listen differently, it will also change again. So for me, the moment I know the album is from 2006, for example, my listening, it has an impact on how I listen to the album, because I'm thinking about the time and my life in that time. And the moment I know this band is from Portland, that the listening changes. And so with every information, I think I'm listening differently to music. And this is getting more clear for me and all that process.
So you
when it has see nothing really to Portland. Do with the technical part.
So you see they're from Portland, and then you think, okay, Portland Trailblazers roster from 2006. And then you go.
For example, yeah, I thought about, when was the devastating blowout loss against the Lakers? No, that was in advance. So, but in this case, I had a lot of think not about Portland, but Seattle, because I never was in Portland, but I was in Seattle. And, you know, they're for America, it's close to each other. And then I thought, when I was the first time there and listening to live music there in the club scene, and during the time I discovered the band Band of Horses, and so I thought, maybe, you know, do they have some relationship? Maybe some sounds are different, some sound similar. So stuff like this.
Cool. Speaking of listening habits, shall we get into our first listen then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Would you like to talk about what you first thought of when the opening track started?
So first track The Crane Wife 3. So, it's good way to start an album because it intrigues you anyway. So, why is it The Crane Wife 3? Why is it not just The Crane Wife, the title track, or 1 or 2? Why do they start with 3? And from the first sound, I thought, wow, do I know this song? And if yes, from which TV show? It's so no, you know, pop culture ruined me. But the sound is, and okay, it's from 2006 with that sound. It must be in a ton of coming of age, teenage, rom-coms or whatever from the sound. And that was my first sound. I think it's a great sound to underline a couple of emotions. And the next thought that came to my mind was that, okay, if that song was released 10 years earlier, like 13 years earlier, I would definitely listen to that song in the room of my older brother. You know, I have a 10-year older brother, and we all live still together at my parents. At the night, usually all four brothers and sisters were sitting in his room and listening to his music. So that's basically
how
I was, I think, found my love for music. And this would be a song at that time that would definitely be in his ballpark, I think. So that was a nice trip down memory lane, because I thought that would be cool. We're sitting there talking about what's happening in school and just listening to that music. So again, no thoughts on the technical part. I was again in memories and more emotional area. But I also thought, okay, is there here a deeper story that they are telling? Just from the words, you know, from first listening, I don't know, just about the all over sound. I thought, okay, maybe that is a very deep song. That was another thing that crossed my mind.
That was a big question for me as well. I mean, I'd heard the song before, but I remember even back then thinking, what is a crane wife? Like, I didn't get the reference at all that Malloy was making, because, I mean, honestly, who sits down and writes about that?
Absolutely.
We'll get into it in the deep dive of what the story behind the crane wife is. So that was my thing, is a big question on my first listening was, or my first time this time around, is this based on an actual story of something?
Mm-hmm.
And I had the same question as you, like, why is number 3 the first one, the first song, which I found out about later as well. I really liked the buildup that they had in the song.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very, very cool way to introduce the album. Like, it had slowly building up with more and more instruments. And then at the, by the end of it, it was like the whole band playing. I found it sounded busy, but which I find can be bad. Sometimes you get like music that sounds very busy and you don't notice any instrument anymore. But I didn't find that was the case here. I found it was, everything was there, but it wasn't like jumbled up. Everything was clear. You could pick out any instrument you wanted to listen to, which is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a lot of instruments that lay in kind of the same frequency range. So they have very similar sounds. And then getting those to pop from each other can be a bit tough at times.
Yeah, that's another part I also wrote down from the first listening. I like, after 1 minute, I think the piano starts coming in too. I said, oh, that's a good one. And how he sings, I will hang my head low. I think other bands and other writers would use that more as like the big chorus of the song. He uses it very nicely, so it sticks to your head, but he's not overdoing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could have used it on more in the song. That's something I also liked. And it builds up a nice energy and bridge to the upcoming song.
Yeah. And at the end of the song, there's like a guitar feedback.
Yes.
And it, do you listen with, were you listening with headphones in or?
Yes.
In the car?
The first listening was with headphones on, yeah. And afterwards, a couple of times in the car.
The feedback actually has a ping pong effect where it bounces from side to side. And if we have any people listening that have listened to previous episodes, I love ping pong effect. So I suck at ping pong, but
what?
When it comes to music, I love the ping pong effect. And as you said, it kind of was a nice blending into the next track, The Island. That was actually a note that I had, was it blended perfectly into track two.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Do you want to talk about The Island?
Yeah, here again, the first thing that intrigued me was the title. Because on the display, I could see, well, the it's too long, the old title, so I cannot see everything. So I checked the old title, and it's The Island, Come and See, The Landlord's Daughter, You Will Not Feel the Drowning. So, okay. And that's, it's 10 minutes long. And next thing was thoughts about the singer and his voice that I really like. And I thought, do I know the singer? Is he maybe in another band that I know? And I will have a big aha moment. I thought about the band Def Cup for Cutie, which is maybe not a surprise. We'll talk about later about it. And then it sucked me in that I could not think actively about the music. It just caught me and I was just dreaming the all over song. So, and I think just at the next, in the middle of the next one, I said, wait, is the other song already over? Is it a new song? So I was just, but very nicely. It's not something, and I said, oh, no, I was not focused on anything. I was still listening to the music, but it was like in a flow moment. Really nice. Really, really, really good listening. But no thoughts. It was just, I was just in some other spheres and kind of dreaming.
A big thing with The Island that I noticed, it, do you know the band from the 70s? They're
the
called
band.
Actually called The Band.
Yeah, I
like Down on Cripple
I know
Creek,
them, but I don't know if they know the music.
The Weight. We'll cover them at some point too, but they,
yeah,
just the composition of The Decemberists makes me, I noticed heavily on The Island that it really makes me think of the band.
Okay.
Just the organ sounds and everything.
Hmm.
Which, and I love The Band. So that was a big note for me on The Island. I really dug throughout the whole album, just the drum and bass together. The rhythm section of The Band, of The Decemberists, is pretty tight.
What does it mean, pretty tight?
Like they're so locked in. Like,
okay.
Just a very good rhythm section sound.
Mm-hmm.
I got with the song Landlord's Daughter, or the section of The Island called Landlord's Daughter, a bit of a 70s rock vibe, but then also maritimey vibe, which comes with most of the songs from The Decemberists. I always get a bit of a seaside vibe, or
yep,
maybe not seaside, but seafaring vibe, which goes, it's a lot of the songs that they have that kind of feel. And I think some of the instrumentation that they use, because they use, yeah, a lot of accordion and such as well.
Okay.
And one thing that I found interesting was in Landlord's Daughter, there's a keyboard section that made me think of this Nordish metal band. I think they're Swedish, maybe. They're from either Sweden, Finland, or Norway, called Children of Bodom. And they have this keyboard player that he's fantastic. I forget his name. The lead guitarist's name is Alexi Leho. And they have like duels between guitar and keyboard, and the keyboard player can like run his keyboard basically like a guitar. Oh, and yeah. I had similar vibes from the keyboard and organ in The Landlord's Daughter. I was sitting there thinking, this really makes me think of somehow of
a Swedish metal band.
of a Swedish or Nordish metal band.
Okay. I can see the relation to Scandinavia from the sound, but not so much into metal.
it was interesting. And the string section I really enjoyed, and just the cleanness of the sound. Mm-hmm. Like there's a minimal amount. It's the effects that they use on everything is very minimal. You don't get a bunch of reverb on the voice, and it's just clean sounding.
I like this description. So if it's clean, it has to be also like minimal, not too much. And this is a very good ratio they do.
Yeah.
Haven't thought about it, but now, as you say, I think it's a very good description.
And then from the island, we move on to Yankee Bayonet, which is a bit of a duet song.
Yeah.
Which I really loved the duet on this one. I think they harmonized each other very well. Like the voices matched perfectly. I wrote down that I really needed to go in depth on the lyrics. I wanted to go in depth on most of the lyrics on mm-hmm. this album, or on not on most, on all of them, because I've always wondered where Malloy gets his inspiration from. Mm-hmm. Again, on Yankee Bayonet, I really liked the rhythm section, and I wrote this would be a very difficult band to actually mix live. I think.
Why is that?
Just because of what I said earlier with having all the... They're very complex, I find. They have a simple enough sound, but it's very complex, I think. There's a lot of things happening. Hmm. Like what I said, it sounds busy, but it's not... Having all those different instruments on stage and mixing them so it sounds good, I think would be tough.
Okay. That's a nice description. So they are like a very functional, bigger company. It's very complex inside, but the outcome they produce is very simple and working very well for the customers to go into business speech. But that's never something easy to reduce the internal complexity to make the output seem so simple. That's a very nice... Very nice view on it.
Or to go into your usual sports terms, it's like a sports team that it's what they're doing is complex, but they have each member has their thing to do, and the way that they're put together, they have their own little pocket to emphasize what they do best or to show off what they do best.
Yeah, and it seems that it's a team that can switch tactics on the fly, so they can adjust with tempo, without needing a timeout. They just know how to do it as a team. So as a coach, you can just trust them.
What did you think about Yankee Bayonet?
Very good duet. So the duet actually woke me up from my wild dreaming through the music. So what's going on here? Also working quite well. Great voices working good together. Same as you thought, okay, what story is here behind that song? So I was also intrigued about the lyrics. And then I get just back into enjoying it and could not really write down something because I was just listening. And
which is good.
Yeah, which is really, really good. The last thought was, again, when I checked the title, is the sound of the Yankee Bayonet, nothing to do with the meaning, also fits to the sound. The words fits to that sound for me. So
yeah, I could see
everything
that.
Everything is really in the flow to that moment with that album for me.
And then after Yankee Bayonet, we move on to track 4, O Valencia.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, probably the most well-known song off of the album.
Probably. I also after research, I figured that out. I was a little bit surprised. I thought other songs would be more.
Really?
Yeah. I think, oh, that's a great song. But I thought another song would be the most popular.
I'm excited to hear which one. What were your first thoughts on O Valencia, other than...
Oh, Valencia. Again, so maybe it's about the word Valencia, but while listening to it, I was also thinking about vacation. So I listened to that sound that, okay, we now really have to fix our booking for the vacation with the friends. And I thought about seaside, you know, want to go to Denmark. So like Denmark, like everything is seaside. And we already, so it, really the interesting thing is we had a list of a lot of houses we want to go, but it was too much. So can't figure it out. While listening to that, I was scrolling through and I thought, nah, that's the house. That's the house where I want to go through. So again, my mind were going away from the music, but the music was kind of a trigger. So, and it really gave me, okay, now this is great music for thinking. So why enjoying and thinking? So, and actually afterwards, even when it has lyrics, usually I cannot write when music has lyrics to it. I like listening to music while I work. Not in the first listening, but afterwards. I used the album a couple of times while writing something down.
Yeah.
So, for example, again, this is more about the emotional side. One of the most important supporters of my professional career is now having this week, the last working week before retiring. And I wanted to write some thank you notes down. I did that while listening to that album because it bring me into the right emotional state of mind. So
cool.
And especially O Valencia is a good song to reflect and also just to enjoy.
A big thing for me this time around was O Valencia was always one of my favorites from the song. I find it sounds like kind of a pop rock song. If you listen to the lyrics, it's kind of dark for a pop rock song. And
yeah,
I don't think that back when I was first listening to it, I don't think I really listened to the lyrics that much compared to this time around. And I found listening to the lyrics made me like it more, but then also made me kind of, again, want to learn more about the idea behind it. And I just really like the upbeat vibe to the song, or instrumental vibe. I found the upbeat instrumental vibe to the song was good. I mean, it's not that upbeat when the lyrics are your blood is still warm on the ground, but so it's interesting that they have like the contrasting, like the instrumental section or the instrumental music in the song is very upbeat, up tempo, but then the lyrics are about have like someone's blood being on the ground, someone getting shot. Yeah. So they kind of contrast each other a lot, which I found pretty interesting.
Yes, absolutely. And I was intrigued, okay, what it's about, but then I don't dig into that while listening to it, right? It was all over the vibe. So not about the lyrics, but it works both ways quite great. And not on the first listening, but afterwards also quite cool video they have for O Valencia.
They have a lot of good videos.
Yeah, and now I have to go deep into it because O Valencia is the only one I saw so far. And I was like, okay, I have to go. I have to watch the others too. Another thing, again, about how they use words. I like that the title is O Valencia and not O, just with the O. It's not OH. So anyway, something different. But this intrigued me also, and it looks good. I don't know. It's a strange that, and for other albums I didn't have that I just looked on the how it looks, how the word looks, but in this case it came up all the time again.
After O Valencia, we move on to another song with a number in the title, track 5, The Perfect Crime Number 2. My biggest question with this song was, what was the first perfect crime?
Yeah.
I still don't know. Like, I was looking for Perfect Crime Number 1, but I didn't really find it. Like, I thought maybe they have another song called The Perfect Crime Number 1 or The Perfect Crime. I didn't find it.
No, me neither.
I'm still stuck on that, on what the first perfect crime is.
Yeah, and at that moment I also thought, well, is this album one story? Is this like also like a storytelling album, and where one story leads to the next? That was also what I'm thinking about.
Which it isn't.
No, it isn't, but...
I actually saw an interview where someone actually had the same opinion as you, wondering that. And Colin Molloy, the singer, was like, no. It's like, there's concepts in the album. It should sound like it is all meant to be together because it's an album it's made to listen to from front to back, but it's not an ongoing story through the whole thing.
Yeah. But it reminded me on my thoughts on the Taylor Swift album that this could be a Netflix show. That, again, asked, could this be a 10-episode Netflix show? It could. So maybe, yeah. I should hire some directors and making TV shows based on music albums. Yeah,
I would watch it, Beric. I would 100% watch it.
Depends on the director and the actors, I guess. So, but there's a lot of potential inside.
I really liked, there's like a rolling kind of, I don't know why I wrote rolling. It's the drum sound on this, just it, like the drum sound kind of just kept rolling along, and I kind of dug that in the song. And I thought that the song overall had almost a manic sound to it, which kind of fits with having like a committing a crime and you're getting away with it, so it's kind of like high energy but also
a lot of adrenaline
at the same time.
Yes,
that was my, and there's cowbell in it, and I love cowbell in songs.
Cowbell.
The way the cowbell was played made me think of this band called Hot Hot Heat.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of their songs made me think of other bands. In O Valencia, I kept thinking of, there's like almost like a bell sound in O Valencia near the end. That made me think of the All-American Rejects.
Are they? I don't know them.
They're like pop punk from early 2000s.
Okay.
They had one album that did slightly well, and that was it. But that was kind of it for me for The Perfect Crime.
Yeah, I also have no more notes from the first listening. But also from the title and the sound, it's building up again a nice path to the next song, I think.
Yeah, which the next song is When the War Came.
Yeah.
Also, after deep diving, cool, interesting story behind the song. I found the guitar sound in the song really reminded me of hardcore bands, which it's just interesting through the whole album. Like it seems like they take different genres and kind of manage to mesh them in nicely into their indie rock, indie folk rock kind of sound.
Yeah. So the guitar really was also, whoa, what's going on here? Heavy guitar. That is something heavier stuff here. And then I looked at the title. Okay. That fits quite well together. and different sound as the other songs. Still, it's not like it doesn't fit. It's still, oh no, it has absolutely its place in a place in this album. And yeah, just good to listen to it. And again, oof, what is that story about?
I think as you've been mentioning, the music tends to match the title of the song very well.
Yeah,
throughout the album, throughout most of the songs on every song that I've heard of by the Decemberists, you never once think, well, that doesn't really fit the title.
Yeah,
I know I've had that with other songs from other artists where I think, why that doesn't fit at all. Like, why would you name your song that?
Absolutely.
But the Decemberists, I think, are very meticulous about how they write their music to match what the song is supposed to be about. And I think it's a very big process for them.
And that was another thought I had. How long does it take for this band to write music? It sounds, all of it with the lyrics, even when I wasn't deep into it, and with the title and the sound, thought it could be that it takes a long time for them to craft this.
They're very meticulous people, I think. And they, we'll get into it in the deep dive, but they have a bit of a cinematic feeling to the music, and it fits to how the band was formed. One other note that I have on When the War Came was, I just love their drummer throughout all the tracks. I just wrote down every track, every note that I have on for the album, for every song is, there's always a note of, wow, this drummer is amazing.
Another pattern of you, or always a good sign when you like the drummer and the rhythm sections.
That will be coming up in one of our future episodes as well. Bass. I don't know where I got this new love of bass, but since we started this podcast, I have a very new appreciation of the bass guitar or bass instruments. After When the War Came comes up, Shankill Butchers, another interesting track name.
Yep.
Where you think, huh, okay, what could this be about?
And
I think it almost like slammed on the brakes after When the War Came. So sound wise,
but lyrically wise, it's still very serious. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
Shankill Butchers, oh, what is this about? And I think in this song, the title of the song is also the most present in the song. So these words of how he sings about the Shankill Butchers, that stuck in my mind. Yeah. More like in how he used the word Valencia Valencia, for example. At least for me. And I thought, okay, is this his lyrical version of some stories you tell your kids at the fireplace to scare them out or something like that?
We'll get into that. A big thing for me was, again, like, what is this based on? Because the way that Malloy writes lyrics, it's all very much storytelling. And I just, the further the album goes, I kept thinking, holy, is this guy like really good at just telling a story in song form? One thing I really liked on Shankill Butchers was the backing vocals. Because they're very distant, like,
okay,
far off, almost as an echo in the wind.
I have to listen to that at the next listening. I didn't recognize that.
And I didn't have that many notes for it, but the final note was, there's like kind of a shaker sound in it. Like a ch-ch-ch-ch that made me think of like chains, old chains on like a prisoner. Like you would hear someone on like with like shackles walking down the street kind of thing. or walking through a jail, which for me fit with the whole idea of like a butcher or kind of something to scare kids, because you have like the, you hear like the chains dragging from the dead goat, from the ghost of the dead person that the butcher's killed, kind of. That's what the image that was popping up in my head when I heard this shaker sound in the background.
That's a good image. Good for the song, I think.
Anything else for you for Shankill Butchers?
No.
Then we move on to track number 8, the Summer Song. I thought the melody of the song was cool. It's a very catchy song, and I really liked the accordion in it. But for me, it was one of the most, it was the most forgettable song for me on the whole album. I don't know why, but it was.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's the best. So all of that songs are also, they're great at listening in deep to it and focus on them and really listening to them. But they're also good just to hear in the background. But this is the best song for just having in the background.
Yeah, it doesn't require the deep focus that the others do, I found.
Yeah, and it really is a good summer song.
And then after Summer Song, we have The Crane Wife 1 and 2.
Yeah, okay, another one. Why is now The Crane Wife 1 and 2? Then why is 1 and 2 one song?
Yeah, that too. Well, I think it's still the two songs, but like if they at concerts they'll be playing 1, 2, and 3 all together.
Yeah, there is a live show from them at KEXP Seattle, and say okay, one more song. I don't know which one, and then somebody is yelling at The Crane Wife.
I say, okay, I saw
which
that
one?
Too.
Which one?
Which one?
Oh. 1, 2, or 3? All of them. Right.
How to make,
but
the
also there, I think he starts with
while.
Crane Wife 3, right?
Yeah.
After, I think, I have to double check.
After my first listen to this one, I really wanted to have a listen to all three of them, but in the order of 1, 2, and 3.
I haven't done
just
that.
To listen to the story.
Okay.
I did, but I kind of like the way that they did it with the album. I like having number 3 as the first one. Kind of Tarantino that stuff.
Yeah.
Have the ending come first.
Absolutely. It has to be that way.
And here again, I just wrote down, I really like the simplicity of it.
Perfect word for that.
I have more stuff about The Crane Wife, but that I want to get into in the deep dive.
Yeah.
With track 10, the final track is Sons and Daughters. I thought this was something that we've talked about before with most of the other albums. This sounded like the finishing track of the album for me.
Yeah, I think that works quite well. This song, I thought this would be the most popular one.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe because I thought I knew that song, and maybe I did. So it was not the first listening, but I'm not sure about it. So
I thought with this one, what they did some very interesting things vocally. Like that you don't hear that much in rock music. They sang in rows where, you know, like one person will start singing it and then get to the end of the first sentence of the verse, and then the next, or the chorus, and then the next person starts from the beginning of the chorus while that person sings on. And I don't know that I've ever heard that from anyone other than the Decemberists when it comes to rock music.
Okay.
It's like a thing that you do in like kids' choir.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked it. Like, I liked it a lot. Yeah. I think it played into the whole idea of a song for sons and daughters, because it's like you're talking to your kids. And then it kind of made it seem like kids singing it back. Kind of, yeah. And I thought this felt like a good song that you could end a concert with, which goes it being a good closer for an album.
Yeah,
I could just see this being
with that.
It's different, but
even better than closing.
I really thought I could picture being at a Decemberists concert and being like, "Yeah, we're done now. Good, Thank you, Decemberists. Great show.
Yes.
And again, I liked the bass.
No surprise. Well, that was another thought I had all over of the album. Well, these are, that seems to be good musicians there. Again,
very, very good musicians. Do you have any overall thoughts for the whole album?
Yeah, after the first listening, I immediately thought, well, that was from your picks for the show, my favorite album.
Even better than Dua Lipa.
Yeah. no, I said, wow, this is good. This is really good.
So this will get more than 6.5.
Yeah, it will get more than 6.5. And again, I said, wow. And afterwards, I listened to it all over and all over again. So, also, even before the deep dive, which I immediately figured, okay, the most important deep dive will be about the songs. And I went through a couple of it, but not through all, because I want to keep some curiosity still open and want to find something out during this show, because I knew, okay,
when Trevor, I was about to say, I'm
when Trevor ruin
everything for you.
When Trevor's getting into it, he will figure so much things out that will make this recording of the show even better for me. Maybe not for the listeners, or maybe so, but okay. There will be a lot of interesting stuff that you will figure out, because I think you will dial to in a lot. Am I right?
I basically just looked up stuff about the lyrics. Yeah. That was my biggest thing that I wanted to learn about. I have a little bit of background stuff that I read about, but for the most part, lyrics and interesting things about Colin Molloy and the band in general. Some interesting band things.
Let's start with that. What is the most intriguing and interesting thing that you figured about Molloy and the Decemberists?
Well, the way that the band was formed, Molloy grew up in Montana, moved to Portland later in life, and was already playing in a different band when he moved there, or was in a different band when he first moved to Portland, and got to know the bass player, Nate Query, and they decided they wanted to do a project together that Molloy had thought of, where it was making soundtracks for silent films, which when you look at that and then see how their music is, I find it fits.
Absolutely.
And Molloy really wanted someone to play accordion for these silent film things. And then Nate Query, the bass player, said, hey, I have this friend, Jenny. She plays accordion. She also plays piano. And so Jenny Conley came and met Colin. And that was then the core of the Decemberists formed. Those three have been together since the beginning. And there was a short period where Nate Query left for a bit. But he's back. And that's one interesting thing I found about the band. They haven't really changed their makeup that much since 2005. Since 2005, they haven't changed at all.
And they're still active.
And they're still active. Like, that is an insanely long time for this large of this size of a band to actually stay together.
Yeah,
I find.
Absolutely.
They've had their little solo projects in between, which is cool. And maybe that's why they can stay together for so long, but they're still together. They have the band is made up of Colin Molloy, who is lead vocals and rhythm guitar, and he writes all the lyrics, I believe. Chris Funk, who is the lead guitarist and does backing vocals. The whole band does backing vocals, like everyone sings. Funk also plays like mandolin, basically all the stringed instruments.
He's a multifunctional.
A lot of them are. I think all of them are basically multifunctional with their instruments. Nate Query plays all the variations of bass and does backing vocals. Jenny Conley is the keyboard, organ, accordion. everything, backing vocals as well. And then John Moen is the drummer. He wasn't the original drummer. They had two drummers before him. I think he joined after their album before this, Picaresque, was finished. He didn't play on Picaresque. This was his first full-length album with the band. And he did great.
Yeah. Trevor approved.
Yeah. Very much so. And he's still with them. Like, it's crazy. A big thing that I found out about Malloy was that he's actually also an author.
Yeah. Well, he writes children's
books as well. He has a trilogy of children's novels called The Wildwood Chronicles.
I can see that.
And now I want to get them for the girls. And he actually comes from a writer family. His older sister is a writer, like a novelist, and his aunt is also a novelist. So it's a guy who grew up with kind of stories in the family.
No surprise.
Not surprising at all that he writes the way he does. Then what else did we have?
What is your main, if you could only present one information about the album you find out, what would it be?
I would tell people what the Crane Wife is.
So what is the Crane Wife?
The Crane Wife is Japanese folklore about a man who finds an injured crane in the forest. It's just a peasant, like not royalty. He's just a normal guy. Found a crane in the forest that had an arrow through its wing, and he took the arrow out and nursed the crane back to health. And then the crane flew away. And then the next day, a beautiful woman arrived on his doorstep, and they fell in love and got married. And they weren't rich, so the woman said, I will start making this cloth for you that you can sell at the market, but on the condition that when I'm weaving this cloth, you never come in and bother me while I'm weaving the cloth. And the man said, okay. Started selling the cloth at the market, and they started making more and more and more money because the cloth was beautiful. And he started getting greedy and wanted her to make more and more and more cloth. And then he also started, and she started getting sick from all the work. It wasn't good for her. And then finally, one day he decided he wanted to go see how she was making this beautiful cloth. And he walked in to the room where she was weaving the cloth and saw a crane pulling feathers from her body, using the feathers to make into this amazing cloth. And then she saw that he saw, and she flew away, and he lost the crane forever. So as the crane was repaying him for his kindness by becoming his wife, there's apparently lots of these tales in Japanese folklore of a man helping an animal in the forest, and then the forest animal turns into a woman the next day and comes and becomes the wife of the man.
Yeah. And there are a couple of different variations of the story, but yeah.
There are. The crane does different things in different variations. But the one that this is based on is about the weaving cloth. And Malloy got the idea for it from when he worked in a bookstore in Portland. And he found like a children's book, a picture book about the crane wife, and read the story and thought, I want to make this into a song someday. Yeah. And then he made it into three.
And into an album title.
And the breakdown of what each of the songs are about is Crane Wife 1 is the literal telling of the story. If you listen to that, listen to the lyrics, is the Japanese folklore story.
Yes.
Number 2 is a look into the brain of the main character. And then number 3 is the inner monologue of the man.
So it has a red line.
Yeah. And the reason that it was that number three was the opening track of the album was that the producer, Chris Walla, who you can tell us about in a moment, thought that using that as the opening track would set a tone for the whole album.
Great choice.
Yeah, and it did. I don't know what Absolutely. Other track you would use as the opening track.
Yeah, and Chris Waller, I mentioned in the while listening to the second song, The Island, that reminded me on Def Cab for Cutie. Chris Waller was a member of Def Cab for Cutie for a long time. And he was one of the two producers and had a great influence, as you just told.
What else did you find out about the album?
First of all, a lot of times when you research for a band or an album, you don't get the best information from the Wikipedia side. In this case, the Wikipedia side is quite good. it's a little bit more deeper, did that. I figured out that, which was not a surprise, that he really likes to write songs about stories. So he's influenced by stories and he's writing stories. Another example was When the War Came. That this song is a portrayal of the 900-day siege of Leningrad during Second World War. And yeah. When the German army surrounded a city entirely and nothing came out and was in two. And so many died of starvation. And and there's a lot of political undertone into that. And there is the story that he wrote a book about that. And then that afterwards he said, the title is Hunger.
That's a book he read about it. He didn't write it.
Yeah. Yeah. He read about it. He didn't write it. The book is from a woman called Elise Blackwell, I think. Yeah. And there's also a story that during that siege botanists swore themselves to protect the catalog of seeds and plants from not only starving population, but also from themselves.
Yeah, and pretty crazy.
Yeah. So that stuck with him, and he wrote a whole song about it. And it makes then afterwards listen to that song way more deeper. That was a thing that while going deep into wow, he puts there's a lot of things behind that. Also. About the Shankill Butchers, that the Shankill Butchers was a faction of the Ulster Volunteer Force, the UVF, that was a loyalist paramilitary organization. And the Shankill Butchers split from them in the mid-1970s and carried out a series of grisly murders. And that's the basis of the song. And that happened in North Island, Ireland. So,
and in the 70s.
In the 70s, yeah.
Like, not that long ago.
No, and then it was involved like killing of 32 people. So,
yeah. And it's kind of funny that you had the incident's not funny, but earlier in the show you mentioned that it sounds like a story that someone's telling their kids to scare the kids. And Malloy actually said he got the idea for the song because he had been in Ireland and met people in Ireland who told him the story. And they said that they grew up hearing the story from their parents as a way to scare the kids from like going out at night and misbehaving. And if the kids were misbehaving, they would say the Shankill Butchers are going to come and take you away.
And I was a little, what? That really is... Why did I get that feeling? And I think everybody knows So yeah. This is a lot of times how you tell kids a story. I think that's what it triggers to me. If you just think about the Shankill Butchers, I would get, okay, that's something serious, but this everybody knows triggered that, I think. And I'm pretty sure that's how he discovered that story. So you tell the kids, like, everybody knows if you do this and that. So
yeah. Track two, I found very interesting. I thought it had like an epic feel to it, the island. And mm-hmm. Turns out it's based on The Tempest by William Shakespeare.
Yeah. Quite epic.
Yeah. And it's three songs. Come and See, The Landlord's Daughter, and You'll Not Feel the Drowning. It seems like Malloy has taken a bit of... He does his own take on the story of The Tempest by the end mm-hmm. of it. And so the beginning is a bit of the beginning of the story of The Tempest, where boat crashes on an island and da-da-da-da-da. Then The Landlord's Daughter is about the one character from The Tempest, Caliban, going after the other character. Caliban is like a ogre or someone who is being used as basically a slave by the main character, Prospero. And Caliban then tries to rape Prospero's daughter, Miranda. Like in the actual book, he tries to, and Prospero stops her in The Tempest. So not in the book, in the play. In this, the way that Malloy wrote it, it doesn't sound like he was stopped. Because in the third part of the song, and You'll Feel the Drowning, it sounds like, when you read the lyrics, it seems like he got away with it and is now trying to get rid of the evidence.
Yeah.
So he's killed Miranda and is, because it starts with putting coins on the eyes, which is like an old Irish way of, or not just Irish, but old way that you would put coins on the eyes of the dead people so they could pay the spirit or the god that's taking them to the underworld. And the drowning is then, maybe she was unconscious and he's drowning her, and that's why she won't feel the drowning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was reading these stories, I had a couple of thoughts. One thought was, I almost felt guilty to enjoy this album so much with that heavy lyrics.
It's so dark.
And the other part was, okay, I enjoy dark music. That's not a secret. And I thought, it also makes sense that he comes from the northwest or west, from Portland. I thought he could be also from Denmark and writing Danish Danish criminal books, crime books or TV shows. And I thought, you know, the Danes have this very, very dark, dark stuff in movies and TV shows, a lot of time, books. And for example, one very famous TV show, maybe the most famous from Denmark, is The Killing. And it got remade in the US and it played in Seattle. And it always rained all of the time. It's okay. This guy could be a writer for this TV shows. And it fits totally that he comes from Portland and the Northwest, I think.
Yeah, There's actually a quote from him saying that the Decemberists' music all takes place in wartime.
Yeah.
And he writes tragic songs because life is tragic, and it's in those moments of tragedy that we actually learn something.
That is true.
Which is also true.
And it's a great way to deal with tragic is with art. Maybe the best way.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure for him with writing about it and also while listening to it. And yeah, a story like this continue with a song like O Valencia, as
which
you mentioned.
Which also gets the ties from Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because it's basically a Romeo and Juliet story, a bit modernized because there's the Juliet character getting shot by her brother, but it's very much the star-crossed lovers story.
Yeah. And that moment I thought, well, so humankind doesn't really evolve over all these years, because every time something is based on Shakespeare, it seems to be good. So basically, storytelling after Shakespeare was done. You just have to use Shakespeare's stories.
Well, he was very good at using archetypes.
Yeah.
And the stories are just classic now. Like, you can't really tell a story about a couple that's not supposed to be together but fall in love anyways. And there's probably versions of that from before Shakespeare, before he wrote Romeo and Juliet. Like, I highly doubt that that's something that never happened before, but
it's all, I think all great art is based on some other art that is influenced by it. So there are stories about it, but I guess he was just the best at it at that moment. That's why it became popular. Sometimes it's that way.
Track number three, Yankee Bayonet, is kind of a Civil War story.
Yeah, just wartime again.
A talk, yeah, more wartime. A talk between a soldier and his wife, kind of as she's at home pregnant with their kid and he's laying on the battlefield dying after getting stabbed by a Yankee bayonet, by a bayonet. So he's a guy from the South who just got stabbed by one of the Northern Yankees during the Civil War.
While reading all this, another thought crossed my mind as well. The band name, The Decemberist, fits also quite well.
They were originally going to be called The December Wife.
No, The Decemberist sounds better.
The Decemberist
and using
fits
the Queen
better.
Wife. All right, so that's the better mix.
But before their very first show, they were supposed to be called The December Wife. And they went to go on stage on their very first show, and they mentioned to some of their friends backstage, yeah, we're going to go on and say, hey, we're the December Wife. And they were like, that's a horrible name. And so they had done sound check and everything as the December Wife. They were the opening act, so they got introduced as the December Wife, and they had to come on stage then and be like, actually, we're the Decemberists.
Oh, that's good. On the fly.
On the fly.
Better choice.
The Perfect Crime. One of the things that The Perfect Crime number two. It seems... I read different things about it, and there's... Part of the song has stuff to do about seems like the JFK assassination. Because they're talking about a nice man in the... Mm-hmm. In the parade getting shot. But then there's also stories about a bank heist, it sounds like, and like a getaway driver. So for me, I think that one might just be a combination of different crime stories that got kind of put together.
I also didn't find out what the real perfect crime is, but then it wouldn't be perfect anymore if you could figure out how it is.
Yeah. Right? Summer Song, I didn't really find anything out about.
No.
But Sons and Daughters is actually pretty interesting. It sounds like a post-apocalyptic song, because at the end of the song, it ends with the bombs fade away as being the lyrics that gets repeated over and over again. And they're talking about living in a land that has been bombed by possibly nuclear weapons, which then made me think maybe this ties into the Japanese folklore and it's like a song about Hiroshima.
Oh, yeah. That could be.
And this was actually a song that Molloy wrote on the bouzouki, which is like a Greek folk instrument. He'd never had a used one before. He bought it and used that song, that instrument, to get the creative juices flowing in the writing process. So he wrote two songs with the bouzouki. He could play, when he started playing it, he wrote this song, and he could play two chords and wrote Sons and Daughter with the using two chords. And then the other song is actually Crane Wife 3. And for Crane Wife 3, he used three chords, which I think is actually pretty cool that he used the bouzouki on the opening track and the closing track.
And only was just don't
maximum
really
three chords.
Yeah, mastered the instrument. Maybe that's why it's so good. Maybe it's why it's called, why it has such, sounds so simple but still good. The other thing I found out was the video of O Valencia that is a great video for the story. But yeah, so, and that's the only video I saw from them, a music video for a song. So that, so, okay, I have to watch more of their things. And another thing is that Molloy looks so cliche Portland indie style.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that's something else that got into my mind.
And we're actually coming up this fall then on the 15-year anniversary of this album.
Oh yeah, 15 years. Oh my God. That's a long time.
Very long time. And now I have a new part of the show.
Oh.
I haven't told you about.
That's good.
But I think it will be fun. We're going to do it with every album that we talk about now. Use one word to describe this album.
Okay. Do you already decide on a word, or you already?
I have my word. I wrote my word down a long time ago.
Oh. Wow. One word. Okay, I still have to think about it. What's yours?
Epic.
Ooh, epic is a good word. Epic music. Good epic music is very good.
Because it's just wide. It's like an epic story.
One word only, okay.
It could be like two words together.
Okay. I see.
I mean, you're German, so Germans like adding like six words together to make one, so you'll be safe.
View on the lake.
View on the lake?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So, the picture I have in mind, it's not a word. It's just like I'm at the top of a cliff. And I'm looking on a huge lake. And it's getting dark. And in that area of that lake, close to it, you can see a city and you can see a forest. And you can see a lot of stories will happen there. But you don't know for sure.
So this is the lake and town that your Netflix, your 10 episode Netflix series is based on.
But and it will be an epic TV show. No, it's but you have to view it from above.
That's basically how I listened to this album.
Yeah,
because I listened to it at our vacation apartment in Heiligenhafen, which is on the 10th floor of a building looking out at the seaside with a little small village beneath us.
And the more I think about it, you can have a deeper look into details that you see from above. So something happening close to the river, something happening almost at the beginning of the forest or at the city. All of that is quite interesting. But it's even better to have just the all overview. Everything combined. And you got a little bit scared when you're going deeper into it, but still very intrigued and you cannot look away.
Good. How do you like that section, the new section very good. Of the show?
We keep it up and I work on it to just use one word.
And so what would you give the album out of 10?
Out of 10, that's an 9.3.
Ooh, a 0.3.
Yeah.
I'd give it a 9. I like nice round numbers.
Oh, I have to.
It's a fantastic album. Like, yeah, it's aged well.
And I ask myself, is there any time on the day in life where you absolutely cannot listen to that album?
No.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. You can listen and be going in good mood and hanging out. You can listen to it and on the darker times and think about crime and war stories and I don't know. So and reflect. You can listen very good in the car. I was listening in while driving in a nice summer weather through Poland. Very good album too. So I thought, wow, this is quite rarely. You can all the time listen to it. I think there will be, at least in my world, I cannot imagine that people say, I don't like this. And maybe a strange thought, but I think all women I dated would like that album. I don't know why, but yeah.
Well, because no one cannot like the album. It's a very good album. Way.
Yeah.
But it falls in with their tastes very well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I can see that with your one ex that I know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think maybe she knows it, but yeah. 100%, because she has good taste.
With influence, I don't know if there's that much influence that the Decemberists have had on other bands with the Crane Wife at all. Maybe the indie rock scene was influenced a bit by the Decemberists, but...
Yeah. I can see that there are a lot of artists that will choose that album as one of their top five favorite albums.
I could see that too.
I can see that songwriters absolutely love that album. So I would not be surprised even also if Taylor Swift would say, well, that is one of the best albums I recently listened to even when writing Folklore or something. So it's not that there I now have bands in my mind that said, well, that they are definitely influenced by that. But I think they have a great reputation in the music scene. Otherwise, I would be very surprised.
I agree. And one thing we forgot to mention, this was their major label debut.
Yeah.
Before this, they were on Kill Rock Stars, and with Crane Wife, they moved over to Capitol Records. And for a first album on a major, it's a pretty interesting album. You can tell that they already had a fan base kind of built up, that the fan base would expect a certain kind of album from them, where the record label couldn't really say, no, you need to make it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I again saw an interview where Malloy said we organized it the way we have our contract written with Capitol. So in the time of Crane Wife was that they had complete creative control over everything.
Yeah.
And they were allowed to do that because they had their fan base already set. So if you don't want to give it to us, then we'll go somewhere else that does.
This is very interesting. That's for me absolutely my thing. They have a heavy fan base. So
yeah.
And they will always stick to them. And I think there are a lot of people who say that's my favorite band. So I go to all the concerts when they I have all the albums and everything. That absolutely seems like a band that have a heavy fan base. Yeah.
They're actually a band I would love to see live. I bet they put on a fantastic live show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any final thoughts?
No, they got great reviews also when the album came out. I mean, we just ranked it. Pitchfork gave it an 8.4 from 10. They're mostly very critical. Spin gave it a 5 out of 6. The Guardian, 5 out of 6. The AV Club gave it an A. Everything I read was
they had quite high. Reviews.
And there was some radio show where the
NPR gave NPR listeners ranked it as the best album of 2006.
Yeah. So fits to have a heavy fan base. So
NPR is fantastic on YouTube. The Tiny Desk concerts are amazing.
Or it's really, really good. And from this fan base, I don't know, to get the voted as the best album of the year, that means something, I think.
Yeah. Especially by the fans and not just by
critics.
Like if you look at like the Grammys and stuff, that's like critics and industry people rating the album. It's a bit different than if you have the actual people listening to the album or to the general public, the public in general, saying out of all the albums that we've listened to this year, this is the one that we like the most.
So last question is, does now listening to this album changed after going deeper into it?
For me, 100%. Now that I actually understand the lyrics, I listen to it afterwards and with the lyrics in front of me as well. And I was like, I actually get the meaning of all of these songs now. And holy crap, are a lot of them dark.
Yeah. For me, it's also, well, okay, now he thinks about this and here, ooh, it's a dark story. Still doesn't bring me into bad mood.
No.
So.
It makes me want to look at more of their songs and see the story behind other songs. Like they have this one song called 16 Military Wives. And I really like it. I want to see what the story is behind that.
Yeah, I have to figure out so many things now as I have a lot of albums to listen.
Picaresque is very good. They have a very good song called The Mariner's Song, which is about a guy whose mother falls in love with a rogue who is like a sailor who just uses the mother and then leaves. And the mother gets so sad, she basically dies of a broken heart. And then the kid goes out for revenge and finds the man. And it's a very good storytelling song. When you listen to it, you get lots of pictures in your head. At least I do.
Okay.
I can visualize the whole thing. It's that's the thing I like about the Decemberists. You can visualize a lot of things when you listen to their music. And it's not just because of the lyrics. It's also the way that they form the songs musically with the different instrumentation, it all just paints a picture so nicely.
Okay. But I, for me, man, when I, when you're listening to what I telling about the first listening, so much of the sound already paints pictures in my mind. So that's
exactly
100% works for me as well. Another, the only song I really knew and before listening to that one from them is I Dreamt I Was an Architect with them. That's also a great song.
Yeah. What was your, we didn't do that. What was your favorite song on the album?
The favorite song. So
or
I think it's
three.
The Crane Drive 3. And then it is not for you surprise. I think it's Over Valencia. So just from the sound. But again, we talked so much about it. All the songs are better when you're listening to them as a construct of the album. Mm-hmm. So
I,
when they flow next to each other, but this will be still my best or my first choice. And as I thought, the most popular would be Sons and Daughters. I also think it's very, from the sound, it's a great song.
My favorite is The Island.
Okay. Oh.
I've always liked the epic feel of the song. Like it's you can tell that it's a big epic story that they're telling, followed by O Valencia and Sons and Daughters.
Yeah. Good choice. I mean, all choices are good from that album. So, but
yeah,
I can see that. Great.
I think that's about it for the Decemberists. Crane Rife. What's your next choice for album?
It's a different genre, and it's, I think, different to all other albums we had so far.
Ooh, are you picking something from country music?
No. Okay. It's one of my favorite bands. I don't know if it, no, band is the wrong word. It's not a band. It's a duo. And I absolutely love to see them live. And it's electronical music. Do you have a guess?
Interesting. Daft Punk?
No, Daft Punk, I think we will cover Daft Punk 2. But it's not Daft Punk.
That's the only electronic duo I know.
Okay.
Other than former guests Gamper and Dadani.
No, okay. It's
I don't know.
The Chemical Brothers from Manchester with the album from 2005, Push the Button.
Push the Button by the Chemical Brothers.
Yes.
Are the Chemical Brothers the guys who did Where's Your Head At?
Where's your head at? No. It's
no?
Not from them. But it's close to that. It's the one where was Galvanize. That's on the album.
I don't really know the Chemical Brothers, so this will be a complete starting from zero for me.
I have no clue if you like it or if you think, oh, I can't stand that music. I have no clue.
And also coming up, we will be recording another episode with a guest soon where we talk about the album by the newest album by L'Imperatrice Taco Tsubo, which is this one. They're a French band and do like disco funk pop music. And that will be with Patrick, also known as Slow Life, a singer-songwriter from Germany.
Great artist name, Slow Life. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Okay, that's the end of the show. You can follow us on Instagram or any other social networks.
Thanks for listening.
We'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.